complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
And I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Thursday, March 10th, 2022. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Kelly Weil, reporter at the Daily Beast, author of Off the Edge, Flat Earthers, Conspiracy Culture, and Why People Will Believe Anything. Also on the program today, Russia continues its indiscriminate bombing of Ukrainian cities as a maternity hospital in Mariupol struck. Talks continue, apparently, with no apparent progress. And as Republicans push to escalate U.S. involvement, the Biden administration draws a sharp line at not providing support for fighter jets to Ukraine. Meanwhile, the House passes a $1.5 trillion spending bill, missing any more COVID aid. House also passes its own ban on Russian oil. Meanwhile, inflation increases to 7.9%. Job numbers still Colorado Republican Secretary of State candidate indicted for election tampering. She was working on the 2020 elections. House Judiciary Committee sends a criminal obstruction referral about Amazon to the DOJ. All this and more on today's Majority Report. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so much for joining us. Emma Vigeland still on vacation. I don't know why I said it that way. Still. It's really just been one day. That would have been a pretty short vacation. She'll be back with us. When is Emma coming back? Like on Tuesday or Monday? Matt Leck still on vacation. He's not even in this country. He's in Europe. So I am here with Bradley and Dorsey. Of course, we will be joined by the regular Thursday crew. Brandon Sutton and Matt Binder will be with us for the fun half of the program today. Also, a reminder, I will be leaving my apartment this evening, which in and of itself is a major event. But in this instance, I'm actually going to another major event. It is the live version of the Bituation Room with Francesca Fiorentini. Comedian Matt Lieb will be there. And New York City Council Member Tiffany Caban will be there. And I will be there. And I imagine others. Just got an IM saying I'm going to be there tonight. It is at the Bell House in South Brooklyn. So check that out. Where is that? Is it in Gowanus? Is it technically in Gowanus? What else would it be?
Park Slope.
No, it's down in Gowanus, right? It's more Gowanus. But I was thinking maybe more it's like, I don't know.
It's or like, we're in there, like South the, Slope is
South
kind of what people
Slope
call it, like
or something. Yeah, maybe. Yeah. So check that out, folks, tonight at 7 p.m. I think the doors open. I think the actual official start time is 8 p.m., but do not miss it. It's going to be the first like a large public event that I've been to. And after this one, We will you can come to our live Majority Report show in Boston. That's happening in May 15th at 2 p.m. We also have a show in Brooklyn that is sold out. However, you can live stream it. If you go to majoritylive.com, just click on the Boston, on the Brooklyn show, and then you will click on the event thing, and you can get the live streaming ticket. But before you do that, you should sign up for the AM Quickie, amquickie.com. We have a more than 50% discount off on your live streaming show. And Jack Crosby, who has been in Ukraine reporting, I think now is in Poland. He is working his way back. And he'll be back, you know, writing the AM Quickie part-time, and we're going to have him on the show and talk to him about it, too. All right, so before we get to Kelly Weil on her book, Off the Edge, Flat Earthers, Conspiracy Culture and Why People Will Believe Anything, this is a clip... who is this show? I don't know this. I've never heard of this show. Is this like a right-wing show or something? Or
yeah, they're like a MMA-affiliated podcast called like the Nelk Bros.
And oh, I wouldn't. MMA-affiliated podcast. There's no way that's going to go anywhere. There's no examples of that type of success.
It's the Full Send podcast.
I mean, you know, had we started off as a wrestling podcast... and then branched into politics, or let's say medicine, public health policy, we would have, what, 5 times the audience, 10 times the audience, 100 times the audience? Should have let, back in the day, I made a fateful error when I didn't let Matt Binder make this into a wrestling podcast. And then we could have just done, you know, rolled in the politics. But these guys got it right. And they have the former president on. And it's not Barack Obama. Not that one. Here is Donald Trump on with the hosts of Full Send. I don't even know the name of the host, but it really doesn't matter. Here he is.
Because you were stern with Putin. Is that why?
Well, not because of my relationship, but really because of the fact I told him he can't do it.
So can you pick up? So can you pick up the phone call right now? Make a call to Putin and say, as a you're not a president anymore, but as an American citizen,
pause.
Can you pick up the phone and?
I just want to be clear on what's going on here. The guy from the MMA podcast is saying, "Can you just pick up the phone and call Putin and go, hey, dude, back off?" Because you know, despite the fact that I'm not president, I'm just a tough guy. That's why well, Putin didn't invade under Trump was because Trump was a tough guy. Now, it could have also been that Putin may have been under the impression that Trump was going to in the future, maybe win an election again and provide everything that Putin wanted in terms of control over Ukraine without having to go to war, which has been obviously very costly for the Russians. Not in any way, obviously, to diminish the fact that they've also killed now thousands of civilians, it appears. If not thousands, certainly well into the hundreds. But here is the MMA guy going, like, can't you just call him up and say, like, dude, back off or, you know, we'll drive over there and.
What resolve is going on?
First of all, you really have to be in a position where you're president, you are president, and you do that. And this would have never happened. 100% would have never happened. And we spoke about it because I knew that he had a love for it. You know, hey, look, they took over Crimea. Under Obama and Biden, but they took over Crimea like Grant took Richmond, okay? They took it over. It was very quick, and they took it over a major, very powerful section, probably in many ways the most powerful section. They have their submarine bases, and they took it over, and that was it. Nobody did anything about it. Under Bush, they took over Georgia. And I don't mean Georgia that we all know and love. I mean the other Georgia. And they took that over, and they took it over very easily without any repercussions, very, very easily. And now they're taking over the whole ball of wax under Biden. And it's really, really a disgraceful situation. It would have never happened. And we did talk about it. I mean, he definitely wanted Ukraine, loved Ukraine, would never have happened.
What do you see happening next then? Because it seems
I love the idea of like he loves Ukraine so much, he has to flatten it. You know that saying, if you love something, then continually pound it with artillery and some air power until it's flattened and its people are dead. That's and then if it goes away, then it was never yours to begin with.
Tensions are high. What? How does this all end? Is this going to be like a long-term thing? How do you see it unfolding?
Well, I said this a long time ago. If this happens, we are playing right into their hands. Green energy, the windmills—they don't work. They're too expensive. They kill all the birds. They ruin your landscapes. And yet, the environmentalists love the windmills. And I've been preaching this for years. The windmills, and I had them way down, but the windmills are the most expensive energy you can have. And they don't work. And by the way, they last a period of 10 years. And by the time they...
Did you let them you can go just a little bit more? I mean, just because what happens after they rust and they don't work?
They start rusting and rotting all over the place. Nobody ever takes them down. They just go onto the next piece of prairie or land and destroy that. It's incredible that they want... But other forms of green energy, they don't have the power to power our factories. They're extremely expensive. And I preached loud and clear.
All right. First off, the difference between getting rid of a windmill and, you know, the massive chasm that you've opened up into the earth to drill, I think it's probably easier to get rid of the windmill, assuming that they're only built to last 10 years, which I'm not quite clear on. But aside from that, there has obviously been some type of clarion call that has been sent out on the right that when you talk about this, be careful, because the obvious and really the only way in which the United States can achieve so-called energy independence is to be decoupled from the international market for oil. Now, Americans don't care about being energy independent. They just want the prices to be lower. We have no ability to drill our way out of this. Our refineries don't even essentially refine, for the most part, the type of oil that we pull out of our ground. So we don't have the ability to do that independently, unless we were to nationalize every single bit of fossil fuel that we pull out of the ground and keep that within our own bubble, which of course none of these people ever have any interest in, because this is the only reason why they're doing it is for the profits in the first place. But the obvious answer, the most obvious answer, is if we had no gasoline-powered cars, or very few gasoline-powered cars, and they were all electric. And how would you get that? Well, maybe you'd build 50,000 or 100,000 charging stations across the country. Maybe you would have government subsidies of battery technology. You would provide tax incentives for cars. You would subsidize the development of less expensive electric cars. There's a whole host of things we could do, and they're quite obvious. And that's why every answer from a Republican about what can we do about this has to be some version of windmills are bad. It's Greta Thunberg's fault, or it's the windmill's fault. Or the solar thing, that the way that it burns the birds, not good. That's the only and he doesn't have the ability to integrate it into an actual conversation. He just knows, like, oh, how could avoid windmills bad? That's it. The other ones at least have the sophistication of sort of like taking a half step. Greta Thunberg's fault and, you know, windmills. But this is, and of course, there's not been enough because the Democrats couldn't figure out how to get Joe Manchin on board. Whatever reason, you don't see Democrats out there or anybody else for that matter coming out and saying the obvious thing. Between Saudi Arabia and Russia and every other involvement that we have in the Middle East, there's one way for us to decouple from that. We just can't seem to do it. Aside from the fact that, you know, there's this sort of global warming thing happening. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk to Kelly Wilde. She's written a book, Off the Edge, Flat Earthers, Conspiracy Culture, and Why People Will Believe Anything. I'm very curious of that. We'll be right back after this. All right, we are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report. It's a pleasure to welcome to the program Kelly Weil. She is a reporter at the Daily Beast and author of Off the Edge, Flat Earthers, Conspiracy Culture, and Why People Will Believe Anything. Kelly, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Let's start with this. I mean, you're a reporter at the Daily Beast. You've been covering for some time, sort of, the netherworlds of the internet. Of all the conspiracies that you came across, I imagine during that time, and all of the different subcultures, why flat earthers?
I picked flat earthers because they were really a case study in how people can believe anything. You know, it's one thing to be a JFK assassination truther, or pick another conspiracy theory that can more or less fit alongside established realities. But when you get into flat earth, you really have to throw out all known information and start from scratch again.
So in other words, this is really just sort of the most extreme that it can get.
Just about. Yeah.
All right. Well, fair enough. All right. So let's talk about the history. Well, I mean, I have a sense of what it is. I think most people have a sense of what being a flat earther means. But what does it actually mean? I mean, what is the flat earth canon?
Sure. So there are a couple competing theories within the flat earth canon. But the general claim is that we live on a flat disk, kind of like a frisbee. There is an ice wall around the outside, and we are enclosed in a dome, kind of like a snow globe.
Wait a second. So what's the ice wall? Where did that come from?
The ice wall comes from flat earthers trying to figure out how they would convert a globe map into a flat map. So basically what they've done is they tried, imagine cutting open the globe at the bottom and trying to lay it flat on a table. So you've got the North Pole in the center and you've got Antarctica all the way around the outside.
Oh, I see. And the ice wall is how we don't fall off?
Yeah, essentially, it's the big fence keeping us all in.
Has anybody, I mean, have there been claims, and I want to go back to the history of this, and I want to talk about the, is it Robotham, I guess, his name. But, I mean, is there anybody who has ever claimed, or has anybody had the idea of like, hey, I'm going to take a ship and I'm going to get to that ice wall? I mean, this is not the year 800 or something, you know, like you could have I would imagine your cell phone for the most part, or a satellite phone, and you could just drive to the ice wall, couldn't you?
You would think, there are actually a number of excuses that people give why they can't go to the ice wall. They'll say that the world's armies are barricading it. But I've met people who are fundraising, at least for a trip to the ice wall. There was, I think, a pair of Italian explorers, flat earth explorers, who tried sailing off last year, and they had to be rescued from the middle of the ocean. And I've also met a couple grifters who say that, yeah, they're part of the ice wall defense team, and they'll take flat earthers down there for $10,000. And they've consistently cut and run with the money.
Let me ask you about this, and then we'll get to the history. But those Italians who tried to get there and they were stranded, were they in any way, I guess, dissuaded, or was it more of like, it's definitely out there and it's just teasing us, the wall?
You know, for most flat earthers, although I can't know this Italian pair's heart, most of them aren't necessarily dissuaded by contrary evidence. I mean, flat earth isn't alluring because it's the most logical explanation. It's not. It's completely illogical. But for people who want to believe, they will consistently find excuses for why their experiments don't work, why they can't get to the ice wall, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay, so let's go back. And when does this... What is the first documented, theory that the world is flat as opposed to round? Go ahead.
Sure. So, first of all, there's this whole myth that we've thought Earth was flat for thousands of years, and that only recently we've realized it was round. That's actually reversed. We've known for 2,000 plus years that we live on a globe, because it's pretty easy to prove. But what happened in the 1840s is there was this English eccentric named Samuel Robotham. He was a really colorful character. He ran a failed utopian commune. He started selling like snake oil medical cures. And then he started doing these experiments that he said showed that Earth was flat. Now we know he was either lying or just really badly messing up his measurements. But it didn't matter, because he started selling books and pamphlets and lecture tours even, where he promoted this theory. And one, he got quite rich from it. And two, he started converting people, even though the theory was as ludicrous at that time as it is today.
All right. So I have some questions about about the time, you know, and just, I guess, this general notion about, you know, how people will adopt these type of conspiracy theories. But when did the myth about Columbus... Because, one of the things that I think was a myth that existed, I think I remember as a kid, was that Columbus, you know, thought the world was flat and was going either to disprove it, or that somehow played into the whole Columbus, legend or the legend part of Columbus. When did that myth develop?
One of the best sources we have for where that developed was Washington Irving, the guy who wrote Sleepy Hollow and Rip Van Winkle. He kind of seemed to have invented it. Maybe it was folklore up to a certain point, but he just tossed it into a book about exploration. And people have really run with that myth for, 200 years since? It's ridiculous.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's pretty impressive, I guess. You write something like that offhandedly, and it has that type of durability. So what was going on, though, in England at that time, in the 1830s? I mean, I guess, or maybe we should talk about like a broader theory of why people adopt these things, because my sense is, my sense is that this is a a reaction to sort of events that are going on that people have trouble processing. And so they want something else that they can figure out on some level.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So basically, conspiracy theories aren't like some weird thought process that only fringe people experience. They're something that we are all susceptible to. We turn to conspiracy theories when we feel like we don't have enough information, or the information we have is upsetting to us. It doesn't uphold our prior beliefs. So when Raoul Botham was writing, there was a lot of upheaval, both economically, the way people viewed themselves as workers, but there was also an emerging emphasis on the natural sciences. Evolution was becoming more accepted, and you know, religion was starting to take a bit of a backseat in some people's minds. So when you get a theory like Flat Earth, it allows you to discard science really wholesale, just say the whole field is not only wrong, but scientists are lying to you. And for people who wanted to believe that at the time, who wanted to push back on this, you know, kind of not quite enlightenment, but, you know, scientific and rationalist wave of thinking, Flat Earth was a really useful tool for them.
It's interesting because you outline it. There's a couple of examples. And I'm thinking more contemporarily, and Nate Wolfe, I guess, but back in Zion, Illinois, in the early 1900s, there's examples of this being a function of religion on some level, but it also feels like it's a substitute for religion too.
I think both of those things can be true. A lot of flat earthers I know are very religious. They are biblical literalists in a sense. So they'll go through the Bible and like point to any reference to a circle and say that that's, you know, supporting evidence for flat earth. But there is a way in which flat earth is so sweeping, it kind of functions like a religion. It's not like, you know, believing in chemtrails in the sky or being a 9/11 truther. It's really expansive. It's quite literally a worldview. And for some people, they can graft their religious beliefs onto it. They can make that a part of their religion. And it is a full belief system for them.
What are the other aspects of that belief system?
I mean, it's pretty malleable, right? Because flat earth is, again, it's this really broad theory. It almost invites people to sort of level everything they previously thought and invite in new facts. But I've met a lot of flat earthers who are very anti-science in other ways. They're creationists. And it's also very compatible with other conspiracy beliefs. So a lot of flat earthers might be opposed to vaccines. They might be, they might believe in certain political conspiracy theories like QAnon or things adjacent to them. So it's flexible, actually. It's a big enough theory that it can welcome all kinds of garbage information in.
I want to get to the extent that there's any rivalry between sort of conspiracy theory communities, but let's, before we get there, tell us about Zion, Illinois.
So Zion, Illinois is actually still a real town, kind of outside Chicago, totally normal place, but it wasn't founded as a totally normal place. It was originally around the turn of the 20th century, started as a fundamentalist Christian community. And it was run by one church that had tons of control over the schools and how parks were managed and local laws. But what happened shortly after its founding is an even more fundamentalist preacher took over. And this guy very quickly converted to flat earth belief. And because he had all this control over schools and local laws, he really turned it into a flat earth cult. He put flat earth in, you know, the school curricula. They banned references to the globe and hymns. It was a flat earth dictatorship. He openly called himself a theocrat. And this existed for decades right here in the U.S.
Wait, so decades, like until, like, how long was Zion, Illinois a flat earth theocracy?
He started kind of going off the wheels started coming off for him in like 1919, which is when he got really, really conspiratorial. And he was writing all kinds of crazy stuff through the end of World War II. And he started to lose power and influence around the end of that. This flat earth leader, Wilbur Vulva, he had all kinds of kind of garbage medical beliefs. He would live forever just eating Brazil nuts and buttermilk, and that didn't actually work out for him, so he died eventually. But it was a long-lived cult.
Wait, he was just eating Brazil nuts and buttermilk. Brazil nuts, I think after you get a certain amount of those in you, it becomes like toxic, right?
You know, I tweeted about this once, and I did actually have like a nutritionist be like, oh, whoa, don't do that. You know, you're going to get too much zinc or something, some heavy metal. I don't know, but it's not a recommended diet.
Yeah, my understanding is I think that if you eat too many Brazil nuts, and by too many, like anything even like close to double digits a day, you're getting, I don't know if it's selenium or whatever it is, but it seems very problematic. Tell us about Nate Wolf, you write about in your book too. This is another example. I mean, it's fascinating, the sort of, because Nate Wolf gets to the sort of the self-awareness that on one hand, there is a self-awareness about, a lot of people think this is crazy, but on the other hand, it's like, but not enough self-awareness to realize like, I think I'm crazy.
Yeah, you know, one thing I would say about flat earthers is that they're not, not actually crazy. And I'm sure you don't mean in the clinical sense, they can be, smart guys. Nate Wolf has a master's degree, but he's a modern flat earther. He's a pretty well-known name in the movement. And he is one of so many people who lost jobs or friends or, real world ties because of the extremity of his belief. He's someone that I spoke to extensively, and he told me about the alienation that he and other flat earthers face, where it's very hard to stay on a level with real world, and friends and family cut you off. And often when people lose that real world connection, they go looking for new community within the flat earth world. So they become more and more involved in this alternate reality and more untethered from, stable real world ties.
This dynamic reminds me of the guy who was featured in Mr. Death, that Errol Morris film. I don't know if you ever saw that. He was a guy who was adopted by Holocaust deniers because he had worked on like gas chambers in this country, and he really had no particular affinity for that theory, but he was brought in, and it made a lot. He all of a sudden had a ready-made community of people who liked him.
Yeah, I think that's a really powerful pull for a lot of people. I mean, flat earth for so many believers isn't just a theory that they align themselves with. It's an actual identity. It's a community and a movement. And I don't think we can completely undersell the power of having people like you. Many flat earthers experience feelings of alienation even before they got into this theory. So if they're already looking for answers and friendship, this is a theory that meets both needs for them.
How many people are we talking about?
It's really hard to get firm numbers of how many flat earthers there are. And, a lot of people aren't very open about their flat earth belief. They are aware that people will make fun of them. But I can tell you, I've been to flat earth conferences with 600 flat earthers in one room. And these are people who are paying $200, $300, not including airfare and lodging, just to be there. So it's not a huge movement on the scale of, say, like vaccine truthers, but it is it's larger than it needs to be in 2022.
How does this relate to say vaccine truthers, or are the dynamics the same here?
I think they're comparable. Both flat earthers and people who don't believe in vaccine science are looking for alternate explanations to establish science, and alternate narratives, alternate media voices even. And to an extent, they're compatible. A lot of flat earthers I meet are also anti-vax. So I think there is a common mistrust between the two movements, and it's just a question of how far people take it.
Let's talk about sort of Facebook and YouTube and the implications. I mean, because, you know, like you say, you talk about this conference, 600 people that in real life, it really sort of seems to cement these relationships. But let's talk about Facebook and YouTube and how much social media exacerbates these things.
Sure. So, I mean, Flat Earth really got a huge boom in the mid-2010s, and we can trace most of that to social media. You know, it's one thing to be a flat earther in the pre-internet era, and you might run into one other person who shares your beliefs, but the internet lets people find these affinity groups and build community in a way that can be nice in other contexts, really. But there are other elements at play. A lot of social media sites or YouTubes have algorithms that promote certain content, and they promote the content that they think that we're going to click on and we're going to stay on YouTube and keep watching videos and keep watching ads. Overwhelmingly, the videos that performed really well were sensational or they were controversial, and Flat Earth is just right in that nexus there. So Flat Earth videos for about 5 years were just these incredible performers within YouTube's algorithm, and people who weren't even looking for Flat Earth, they might've been watching a video about outer space or religion or a different conspiracy theory, found Flat Earth recommended in the videos alongside what they were watching. So that pulled a lot of people into the theory. And it also created a little micro industry of Flat Earth YouTubers, people who realized, oh, I can, you know, get quite a following promoting this theory. And, you know, by and large, they were right.
Are they, when people get pulled into that, are they bringing people into the theory of Flat Earth, or is it like, I'm watching because I can't believe how much these people seem to believe this? In other words, you know, is it, how much of this is ironic viewing and how much of it is recruitment? And I ask because really, you know, it seems to me I don't think that flat earthers represent a danger to society, maybe to themselves. You write about Mike Hughes, who was trying to prove that the earth was flat, I guess, by flying some vehicle and ended up killing himself this way. But I guess I'm more interested in the dynamic that a conspiracy theory like this creates, because QAnon has been far more successful in terms, and I think I would say far more toxic. I think there's a whole host of them. The election, you know, which has now been adopted by the Republican Party, seems to be sort of bought into that conspiracy theory. How much of that dynamic that we see, you know, with flat earthers is applicable to the growing, what seems to be growing sort of conspiracy communities that are maybe a little bit more detrimental to our society?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right to point out that there are a number of dynamics at play here. And as much as I'll hammer a YouTube or a Facebook for artificially promoting flat earth, I think it's important that we recognize that institutions with a lot more power, like the mainstream GOP, are now huge platformers of conspiracy theories. They're normalizing it and they're weaponizing it. And theories like QAnon, which, you know, started fringe and still make extremely fringe claims, are being ingested into this bloodstream. But as far as how theories like Flat Earth work, I don't think we can entirely silo them into the harmless field just because their core claims are kind of silly. Because what's going on right now is conspiracy movements online are networking. So Flat Earth groups, although in around 2017, when I started monitoring them, were they did keep to themselves a little bit more. Nowadays, they are promoting QAnon-like theories. They're promoting vaccine hesitancy. And QAnon channels are promoting flat Earth. There's a ton of exchange. And I've even seen that in person in the meat world. Like, I went to a flat Earth conference, and these two women approached me and tried to give me a bracelet. And I'm like, why are you giving me free stuff? And it had a QAnon bangle on it. I'm like, are you even flat earthers at all? They're like, not really, but we thought flat earthers might be interested in this thing that we believe. So there is a real consciousness that people who might be conspiracy curious could be pulled further in an extreme direction. And I do actually think that's happening in a number of conspiracy movements.
Flat earthing is, I mean, a gateway drug, or is it, it's, I mean, it, how much of this is people who are looking to make money, and how much of this is, you know, like, what, break down the sort of dynamic, you know, the, where the lines are in terms of, like, you know, sort of people who are exploiting these, the desire to belong and whatever the conspiracy provides for them, and then the exploited, like, where, like, how would you draw those lines? I mean, do you have a sense of, there's a couple of these people who are just like, I'm chasing the clicks on YouTube because I'm monetizing this stuff, or I'm selling, you know, whatever it is, you know, a special vitamin mix or whatever. I mean, what is it? How does that break down?
You know, I think it actually breaks down along similar lines as most other influencer spheres, which are kind of pyramid schemes in an unofficial way, right? You have the people on top who it's really, really working for, and you only have a couple people who are really profiting from this. And actually, I'd say that the people who get the most clicks on a conspiracy video are not flat earthers, or the most clicks in a flat earth video. You know, you have influencers like Logan Paul made a flat earth video. I think Shane Dawson made one. And they're not flat earthers, but they recognize that this is a sensational topic and that they can get some good play from that. Underneath them are genuine flat earthers, or people who make their whole channels out of conspiracy content. And some of them do make a living. They genuinely do from that content. And they become kind of celebrities in the conspiracy world. And then underneath them is this just ecosystem of micro influencers, you know, people selling flat earth books to each other and buying the other guy's flat earth t-shirt, selling conference tickets. And then there are so many people who are just feeding their money into the system, paying $300 for a conference where they buy a, you know, a $25 hat and a $50 shirt. And, you know, somebody sold me a flat earth cookbook via PDF for $20. You know, you can just waste all your money on this kind of thing. So most people, I think, are getting scammed to a slight degree.
What is it? What's in a flat earth cookbook?
Just the worst recipes. Just telling you how to make pasta. Not worth my time.
Just to tell you how to make pasta. How is it different like when you live on a globe as opposed to a flat disc?
I think it was more just a branding opportunity. The guy knew that he could, you know, kind of slap the flat earth name on it and people would buy it. I did.
Well, all right, fair enough. So let me ask you this. I mean, do you come across any other conspiracies in the course of your work as a reporter in this field that are clearly just scams? I'm thinking, you know, birds aren't real. I mean, I think like that was developed because somebody wanted to play a joke. It was somebody who was a comedian, I think. And it just sort of grew and he just wanted to see where. But I mean, have you seen situations where something like this has spawned an actual movement?
You know, you could make that argument, I think, with things like QAnon and Pizzagate. Most of their believers are really diehard believers, but both of those had inauthentic beginnings. QAnon is somebody LARPing as a government official, and unfortunately, they're just inspiring national Republican bloodlust. But I mean, none of these theories are factual. Somebody authoring them either has completely bought into their own lunacy or is consciously deluding people. And I think that's as true with, you know, flat earth as it is with political conspiracy theories that are cannibalizing the GOP right now.
on this program now get like, you know, will people come after us on Twitter or on YouTube as like just doing the work of whatever secret society that promotes the idea that the world is not flat?
You might get one or two, but you know, it's, listen, I've hung out with them for like years and I don't feel personally threatened. So, join the club.
How do they respond to you? Does it get to the point of like, oh, she's definitely been sent by the government, or who is the entity that is keeping us shrouded in this belief that the world is not flat? Is there an entity that is in charge of it? And do you get accused of being like an agent of that?
There's varying responses, because they do ask people, who do you think's hiding it? A lot of people will say the government, or I've heard somebody say it was like witches. And then, of course, standard answer is extremely anti-Semitic. So you can imagine. Do I get accused of being involved? You know, I think I have a couple book reviews to that effect right now. But typically, listen, when I go and report on flat earthers, I tell them who I am and what I believe. I'm a journalist. I believe in round earth. But if you want to hang out and talk, I'm here to listen. And I've found that people are okay with that. People do want to talk. And they often tell me about their feelings, not just, you know, their planetary beliefs. And so I find that people seem to trust me enough to not think that I'm a CIA agent, but to think that I'm mistaken and that I will come around, so to speak.
Have you come around at all? I mean, has it shaken any of your beliefs in the round Earth?
No, I think I can prove round Earth pretty easily, so I feel pretty comfortable on that one.
All right, lastly, what is the motivation for whomever it is that's hiding this information? What is the motivations attributed to them? I mean, because why are governments spending all this money putting troops at the border of the ice wall when there's an ice wall there? Like, what is the benefit that the Jews or whomever it is that is hiding the fact that the planet is flat? What is the benefit that we're supposedly getting from this?
You know, you can ask 10 flat earthers and get 10 different answers. I typically hear things ranging from mind control to downplaying the role of religion, but I'll leave you with the weirdest one that I've ever heard. So flat earthers don't tend to believe in outer space. They don't think it exists. I was talking to this guy and I'm like, so what's the point? Why even hide it? He says, I think that they are trying to trick us into believing that there is an outer space, so that they trick us into believing there are aliens, so that when Jesus returns, we will mistake him for an alien and shoot him on sight.
All right. Fair enough. I mean, I don't know why we would have to be so aggro against the aliens, but all right. I mean, that's at least there's an explanation. Kelly Weil, the book is Off the Edge, Flat Earthers, Conspiracy Culture, and Why People Will Believe Anything. Thanks so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
All right, folks, we're going to head into the fun half of the program. How is our sound? I know that we got a couple of IMs during that. We are having a little bit of problems with the sound. We're still working on it. And hopefully we will resolve that. We will also put out an edict, no AirPods in the future. Because that also, though, AirPods are horrible to do Zoom calls with. They pick up all the sound, the room sound.
It's weird. They're hit or miss. Like, I'll see interviews on, you know, on YouTube and they'll sound great, but every experience I've ever had with them live streaming, they're just really bad.
No good. No good. We will head into the fun half. Dog-faced Herman on IM. Yesterday, you talked about Tucker Carlson going to St. George's. It was a tawny prep school in Newport, Rhode Island. And Dog-faced Herman says, I lived in Newport and worked at a photo lab. Cocaine was a popular drug at St. George's. I know because I saw the pictures. Hundreds and hundreds of pictures. Well, interesting. Jonathan Armstead says, I remember years ago when one of your sponsors was Mova Globes. You even went as far as holding one on air, and now your interview is a flat earth debunker. I see through you, shameless shill. Joking aside, this was a best of candidate. And I want to come clean here, folks. But my rabbi sent me a message yesterday.
Has that always been there?
Yes. Yeah. It's always been there. It always reminds me, remember, the world is not flat. Folks, don't forget, you can support this program by going to justcoffee.coop. When you go there, you can scroll through their coffee, tea, or chocolate. All fair trade. Great company. Obviously, co-op. Owned by its employees. But what is even more impressive about them is the way that they treat the farms that they get their coffee from around the world. Started, I think, in Chiapas is the first place they... I think that they got coffee from, and they treat those suppliers really, really well. You know, coffee, sometimes you get a bad season, you get a wet season or a dry season, and it impacts the coffee production. Just Coffee always works with these farmers to make sure that they are able to sustain themselves. And then the coffee is also delicious. And you can also get the Majority Report blend. And you get 10% off with the coupon code MAJORITY. JustCoffee.coop. If you have never tried it, do it now. Also, the show relies on its members for 99.3% of its, I think it's probably actually closer to 92.7% of its revenue. You can become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. jointhemajorityreport.com. Don't forget, if you want to IM the show and the fun half, pick up our app, majorityapp.com, iOS, Android app, totally free. Pick it up. You can listen to the show live. You can watch the show live. You can IM with us and join the Discord, majoritydiscord.com. We have it all, ladies and gentlemen. There's over 5,000 people in the Discord. It's nuts. Snoozin' Sarandon says, will the purchase of a streaming ticket allow us to watch a live show at a later time or only in real time live streaming? No, you should be able to watch the show. We will make it so that you'll be able to watch the show after the fact. And again, if you sign up for the AM Quickie at amquickie.com, you will get over 50% off the cost of that live streaming show. So check it. Why doesn't the ice walls melt? Come on. It's obvious. We'll tell you more in the fun half. 646-257-3920. See you there. 3 months from now, 6 months from now, 9 months from now, and I don't think it's going to be the same as it looks like in 6 months from now, and I don't know if it's necessarily going to be better 6 months from now than it is 3 months from now, but I think around 18 months out, we're going to look back and go like, wow.
What?
What is that going on? It's nuts. Wait a second. Hold on for a second.